May it please the court. The fundamental error here is that the district court should have recognized that the invention does not require reauthentication, nor was reauthentication added to claims 1 and 24 during prosecution to overcome prior art. The district court got hung up on a statement in the abstract that led it to conclude wrongly that an operating session must start only after initial authentication. The full intrinsic record demonstrates that an operating session starts with the request for a protected resource. Based on its definition of operating session, however, the court reasoned at A131 that, quote, it thereby follows that the claim limitations requiring forwarding of the predetermined digital ID during an operating session do not read on initial authentication. Thus, the court further erred by ruling that to thereby confirm must refer to reauthentication in claims 1 and 24. In fact, the logic of the claims and the remainder of the specification shows that claims 1 and 24 read perfectly on initial authentication, which happens in an operating session.
Well, now, claims 1 and 24 were amended during prosecution to add limitations, in effect, from dependent claims 3 and 5, I guess.
That's correct.
Claim 5 was the one which previously did, I think everybody agrees, require reauthentication, correct?
Well, claim 5 required, actually encompassed initial authentication and reauthentication.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's claim 6 that talked about successive requests, which is the first claim that exclusively talks about reauthentication. So what was added from claim 5 was to check the digital ID from the access key, which in that context is part of initial authentication and fits within the logic of claims 1 and 24.
But you wouldn't have satisfied claim 5 by just initial authorization, you think?
I'm sorry, wouldn't have satisfied
claim 5? In other words, claim 5 had the requirement of intermittent checking, so checking right at the outset wouldn't satisfy the requirement.
That would only be part of it. That would not be the whole of it. That's correct,
Your Honor. All right. So the question, my question is, what if claims 3 and 5, the examiner said, if those are added, this will be allowable, and language from those was added. If claim the substance of claim 5 was in fact added, then what was added if not reauthentication?
Well, as I said, the substance of claim 5 was more than just reauthentication. And moreover, things were changed. Like the word intermittently was not put into claim 1. And by the way, the whole selectively request language was not put into claim 24 at all. So if the examiner thought that they were, the idea that reauthentication was being added certainly couldn't have been added to claim 24, which was application claim 28. But more specifically with your question to claim 1, what was added was the part about pulling the access key, checking for the digital ID, and then in adding it to claim 1, it was limited to initial authentication. The intermittent part was not put in claim 1. That language isn't in there.
Well, the language confirms
selectively.
Sorry, just a fine play. The language confirm with there, and I take the verb confirm typically to mean to affirm that which one already believes to be the case. As in, for example, I would not say that I checked the newspaper today to confirm that I won the lottery unless you had called me and told me that I won the lottery, and I would check it to confirm. So it seems to me that that itself suggests a reauthentication or a redetermination of the validity of the address to which the connection is assigned.
I think it's more in the context of confirming the expectation that once you've made that request, there is a user in this strong authentication context, there is a user with an access key, and there's going to be a digital identification, but you're confirming that it's there. It actually goes through the step of requesting it, obtaining it, adding it to the username and password, and sending it to the clearinghouse.
Now, would you agree that the examiner appeared to believe, by virtue of the language used in the reasons for allowance, that there was reauthentication was added? The requirement of reauthentication was added to claims 1 and 24?
Absolutely not. The examiner talked about checking for the predetermined digital ID during a session. So you have to look at what an operating session is. And if you look at the meaning of what an operating session is, let's look at claim 1, which is on A196. And that, of course, is the best place to start, according to this court and Phillips and Vitronics, et cetera. If you look at the preamble right from the beginning of that claim, it talks about the elements of this claim occurring in an operating session. It doesn't say before an operating session starts. The second and third elements of claim one refer to forwarding identity data for the server and subscriber, quote, at the beginning of an operating session in which, okay, so this is happening again in an operating session in which access to selected resources is requested. So the request for resources is in the session. So that's three places in the preamble and the first two elements where it says that this happens in a session. If you look at figure two, for example, which is what figure two depicts the steps that are taken during a session, according to column six, which describes it. Figure two is at A156. And figure two starts with step one, which is request for protected content, which is exactly what we're saying starts a session, an operating session. From there, you can continue, for example, to figures 17 and 18, which are at A165 and 166. And everyone agrees that those depict initial authentication, the starting of a session, as figure 17 is titled. And there, again, at box 100, the first step is a user requests access to a protected resource. And carrying over into figure 18, you see at box 144, 146 in the leftmost column of figure 18, it talks about the login interface requesting access or polling for the access key. It then reads the digital ID, 146, and as you continue down the leftmost column of figure 18, it sends that back to the login enforcer, which is on the server. So that's exactly what you saw in claim one as you get to elements D and E, where it's taking that digital ID off of the access key, it's combining it with a username and password, and it's sending it back to the server, which clears it with the clearinghouse, and then decides if it's authentic that it can release the protected resource. So figure 2, figure 17, figure 18 all fit with the logic of claim 1 and suggest that an operating session starts with the request for a protected resource. So on that issue, PRISM asked this court to hold that an operating session is a period of communication between a subscriber client computer and a server that begins with a protected resource. I'd like to turn to also the to thereby confirm limitation.
Well, I have a question regarding claim 24. If it was amended, what did it add to the previous claim?
Well, what was added to claim 24?
If it doesn't require re-authentication.
Well, again, what was added, this is the method claim version of claim 1.
Right.
What was added was element C, which talks about forwarding a predetermined digital identification. And again, that was not in claim 1 or 24, either as initial authentication or re-authentication.
But when you add the language, as Judge Bryson pointed out, you added the amended original claim 5 and part C, requiring a subscriber client computer forward a predetermined digital identification to said first server to thereby confirm that a network key is connected to the said subscriber client computer. Is that not re-authentication?
No, Your Honor. That's
what is that?
That's initial authentication. Now,
so that's what was rejected by the examiner in the first place.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Initial authentication wasn't part of claims 1 to 4. Claims 1 to 4 did not refer to the hardware key and checking for the digital ID off of the hardware key. So that was added from claim 5, and it was added to claim 1 with the language selectively request. It was added to claim 24 without even that selectively request language. It was simply added that it checks for the digital identification. It has to get that digital identification, as you see in figure 18, and as is in the logic of claim 1, in order to go to the clearinghouse and clear that this is a valid user.
Well, the language selectively was not in the original claim 5. It said intermittently.
And that's part of what I was saying to Judge Bryson, that change is part of what only put initial authentication into claims 1 and 24, not re-authentication.
Initial authentication was already in the prior art, and that's what the examiner indicated.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. What was in the prior art was a system that, for example, two repositories in STEFIC communicated between themselves using encryption and decryption and certificates without going to an external clearinghouse, without reading a digital ID off of a hardware key. So it was really, it was a fundamentally different system, and it wasn't necessary to add reauthentication to overcome that prior art.
But he allowed it over Stefik, is that correct?
Ultimately, it was allowed over Stefik.
Over Stefik.
Yes.
And Stefik failed to disclose, as the examiner said, the server requesting digital information from the client during an operation session and using the information to confirm with the hardware. So that's reauthentication.
No, Your Honor, it's not. As I was explaining, an operating session starts with the request for a protected resource. So during an operating session includes that initial authentication that you see in Figure 2 and Figure 17 and 18. And checking for that digital ID is part of how in that operating session it performs initial authentication. It has to get that predetermined digital ID, combine it with username and password, go to the clearinghouse and find out that you have a valid server and a valid subscriber.
And Figure 20 then? What is Figure 20?
Figure 20 is reauthentication, and that's a separate process, although it has some of the same elements.
And in your view, E adds what to D?
Of Claim 1, Your Honor?
No. Because D adds the hardware key. And you've talked a lot about the hardware key. What does E add that D does not? In other words, what you added Claims 3 and 5. What is it that was in Claim 5 that was added that wasn't already present in Claim 3 when it was added to Claim 1?
Requesting the digital identification from the hardware key. That's what's explicit in Element E, and that's not in Element D.
It's hard to imagine what purpose would be served by the hardware key adapted to generate a predetermined digital identification if it wasn't going to be exactly that system, right?
Well, there are other things that could be on a hardware key. It could be just a number. It could be a name. It could be something that's not an algorithm, or is it, you know, this?
But it has to be to generate a predetermined digital identification. That's in D, right? So that it has to have that.
Right. Well, okay. So you're correct. The hardware key has a function in D, but it's only in E that it interacts with the server. So I think that's a fair distinction. That's another step that isn't expressed in D.
But in step E, isn't the server making the query?
That's correct.
So that's reauthenticating the key's existence at that point in time.
No, Your Honor, the server has to make a query in initial authentication also, and that can be seen in Figure 17 and Figure 18. If you start at on page A165, if you start at 110, box 110 and block 116, the server application login enforcer makes the user log in.
But that's true of all identity data, correct? It's not exclusive to the digital identification, correct?
Right.
The key.
The server starts the process, and as part of that process, it asks for username and password, and that it read the digital ID. If I may, I'd like to reserve my available time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you. Mr. D'Amato?
Di Matteo.
Okay.
This is a classic claim construction appeal. It's been very well briefed, so I have very little to add, just to respond to a couple of comments. I think the court understands that the language at issue, this to thereby confirm, is directly from original dependent claim 5, which indeed nobody really disputes is reauthentication, intermittently requesting. It was clear in the examiner.
There's a dispute, I think, on that, because I think Mr. Swenson says, well, it incorporates reauthentication, but it also reaches simply initial authentication.
Well, it's our position, and it's clearly directed only to reauthentication, because it's the server asking for only digital information to confirm that the hardware key is attached.
Well, what are you seizing on that tells you that that's only reauthentication? The word confirm?
The word confirm, the words from the server.
Well, but
if
I understand correctly, that all the identification data comes, there's a request from the server in all those cases, correct?
The server requests, in the words of the claim, identity data.
Right. So there's nothing peculiar about what goes on in E that distinguishes it from the process that's employed with respect to the other identity data, correct?
There is something peculiar going on in E, the right? Confirm, and that is the server confirming that said hardware key is attached.
Well, so but again, are you going back to the word confirm? I thought you were saying there's another reason besides the word confirm that we can discern from E that it must be exclusively directed to re-authentication.
It's three things. It's the server making the request.
All right, but that occurs in authentication, I understand.
The server requests identity data in initial authentication. The server also requests re-authentication. So it's consistent with both.
All right.
Okay.
So we really can't count that.
Two, it's not asking for identity data. It's it's not asking for identity data. It's asking for something specific.
Right.
Just the predetermined digital information, what is sitting, the number on the key. That is a subset. And the only time that this system looks at that subset information, just the digital information, is in re-authentication. In all other times, digital information is lumped together with the identity data. It's part of that bundle of information. But the only time that the server is looking just for identity data is in re-authentication. So that's two.
You draw this from the spec.
Exactly.
The descriptions of authentication versus initial
exactly,
authentication. Your Honor. Re-authentication, right?
Parallels the spec.
All right.
Perfectly. Three, the act of confirmation. And I agree with you. That was the word that jumped out at me when I first looked at this. When you confirm something, there is a statement made, and then you're confirming it. Your lottery example. Ronald Reagan's famous quote, trust but verify. I trust that you've done something, whether it's ballistic missiles, but I'm going to verify it. That's re-authentication, and that's the words the specification uses. Again, it uses the words to ensure that the hardware key is
connected. Mr. Swinson argues that that's true where you have backup initial authentication mechanisms. So that you have three different ways to tell whether you've got the right person, and your third way becomes a confirming method. It just gives you greater insurance, something that you already have some indication that you have.
You're probably articulating even better than him, but I don't understand that point and why confirming is something, why confirming is the same as initial authentication. Because initial authentication is something that's occurred on the clearinghouse on identity data.
Right.
But confirming is there is a statement made. In this case, digital identification has been passed up, and now I'm going to confirm that that digital identification matches, the hardware key matches, and that's my confirming act. Mm-hmm. In other words, during initial authentication, there is digital information, part of the identity data, that gets logged. It becomes part of the session ID. Right? The confirming act is when the server then just asks for the digital identification alone at a time subsequent to initial authentication and compares that digital identity to what it just received from the initial authentication data to confirm that the keys match. Let me say that again because that's confusing. All right, if you understand it, it wasn't perfectly articulated. But you understand that's the act of confirming. And that's the three things. The fact that it comes from the server, consistent, but it's a server request. Two, that it's only digital information. And three, that it's confirming. But the file history makes this very clear. And that was my opening point. When original claim, dependent claim five, said intermittently, the server intermittently requests this digital ID to confirm the hardware key is attached. Even PRISM concedes that that claim was initial a re-authentication. And that was the claim, that re-authentication claim, what the examiner allowed. He says, if you incorporate those features into the claim, I will allow it. And that's exactly what they did. They took those features and they put in the claim.
Not quite.
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute, with that subtle change. And the examiner told us why he was allowed, that the prior art fails to show that the hardware key is confirmed during an operating session. Now, let me take a small little detour here. This is the first time on this appeal that PRISM is taking the position that confirming during an operating session is not re-authentication. In their briefs, they were pretty clear that confirming during an operation session is reauthentication. But now confronted by this court with the examiner's reasonable allowance, they've taken a switch. I think the record's pretty clear that confirming during an operating session is reauthentication, and that's what the examiner left. Now let's come back to the not quite.
Selectively.
Their entire case is down to switching the words intermittently to selectively. Does that magically transform a reauthentication claim to initial authentication? No. All selectively said, let's go back to intermittently. That's a series of requests to reauthenticate. Selectively now says, okay, you have to do it at least once, and we're looking for a subset of data that you have identity data, but now all we want is the digital information. So it's completely consistent with reauthentication, but you're only going to do it once. Two, during the examination when they made that amendment and they changed intermittently to selectively, they never argued to the patent office and the examiner, by the way, examiner, we've made this change, and what was, and everybody agrees, was a reauthentication claim that you allowed, is now selectively and is now initial authentication. You're silent on that. Three, you have the examiner's reasons for allowance, where he understood that this is confirming during an operating session. Not only did they sit silent, they thanked the examiner and appreciated his comments.
But that's boilerplate. We've often said that the examiner's understanding of the scope of a claim for purposes of the statement of reasons for allowance is not binding on the applicant.
Set alone, that may be true. But coupled with the reasons why he allowed the claim, the subtle word change, and their acknowledgement and appreciation for that, I think the public record compels that it be read as reauthentication. How would the public otherwise read this file history? I'm going to briefly touch on operating session and then sit down.
Operating session, except to the extent that it bears on this issue, I take it, as an independent freestanding issue and also connection, the hardware key, don't resolve this case, I take it.
They're not, right. So you can decide this on thereby confirms. Connect.
Not only, even if we decided not to rule on thereby confirms, we couldn't decide the case, I take it, on issues 2 and 3.
Exactly.
So I'm not sure why we're here, other than to, if there's a remand, give the district court some advice.
Certainly on connected, without question, that would be giving him advice. And my interest, we've made that point in our opposition brief. It doesn't belong here. Operating session is only in here in front of you because that was one of the rationales that Judge Farnan used to reach his claim construction onto thereby confirm. But I agree with you. If properly construed to thereby confirm as reauthentication, operating session does not need to be construed. But that's why I'll only touch on it briefly and sit down before using up my time. The question there is, at the beginning of an operating session, how to properly construe that? Does that include within the operating session or not? And we have competing definitions for that term. Prism's position is that embraces the operating session. Our position, defendant's position, is it's the moment just before. Accepting that there's at least a legitimate dispute on how to construe that term standing alone, Prism loses. Why? Because when you turn to the specification, it's very clear. And the abstract is straight on point. It says an operating session occurs after initial authentication. No ifs, ands, or buts. And their only way around that is to argue that the claim language is so clear and so diametrically opposed to what the abstract says, you're allowed to ignore it. And it's not that clear. And it's pretty clear that there's at least a legitimate dispute, and the specification answers that for us.
Now, is that supported, the starting session, supported by figure 17, the flow diagram there?
Exactly. That's the moments just before an operating session is beginning. What do we have to do to get this session started? Not that the session has started. Now, the debate gets into linguistics because the word session is used broadly. It's a very generic.
Always does.
I'm sorry?
Always does end up in linguistics.
Claim construction. The word session is used very generically. And they're right. There are times when the whole thing is called the session. But when you put the adjective operating session, you have the abstract. And then when you put the adjective new session or active session, you have what the specification
is. Well, it's headed up by saying starting of a session.
Exactly.
That's the beginning of the authentication. That's the initial authentication.
Right. This is what do I have to do to launch the session? And that's where we are. I have nothing further.
How does that fit in with the flow diagram on 20?
Flow 20 is during an operating session. That is re-authentication. And that's exactly what it's called.
That's the real heart of the issue, isn't it? If you follow the flow diagram in 20?
The issue as to operating session or to thereby confirm?
Thereby confirm.
Yes. What happens in 20 is you have the request, you have a timer on the server. It says, hey, we now have to check whether the hardware key is attached, if it's the same one. That's the session validator. Has the time limit exceeded? That's box 120 on figure 20. Yes. Okay. Let's now selectively look for the digital information. And you have boxes 222, 224 saying, okay, this is the server requesting only the digital information.
And that comes in from the server.
That goes to the server, and that gets sent over to the client. Client says, give me your digital ID, passes it back up to the server onto 21. And then the confirmation, to show you how this all comes to closure here, if you look at box 258 on figure 21, session validator finds user session entry and validates the encrypted digital ID. That said hardware key being confirmed with what was originally used to log on.
Now, in terms of the mechanics of the initial authentication
yes.
process, the mechanics, setting aside the fact that in re-authentication there's a call only for the digital information, the mechanics with respect to the calling for information regarding digital information would be the same as those described in D&E, would they not?
No, they're different.
E, actually.
They're different. They do share one thing in common.
And I'm looking at figure sure. 18 for this.
Sure. They do share one thing in common.
Login interface requests, right. Access key, blah, blah, blah.
Right. They share one thing in common. In both cases, they actually have to pull the hardware key and get the digital identification off.
Okay.
That's what they share in common. But in initial authentication, if you look on figure 18,
mm-hmm.
box 148.
Right.
That digital ID is then merged to the login parameters, and it becomes one of a group, a set of numbers, username, password, and digital ID. So in that case, it gets lumped together into a bigger number, digital ID.
But it's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
But the claims already reflect that before you get to thereby confirm. Right? If you look at claim one, element D, which comes from original dependent claim 3. At least one hardware key connected to the subscriber client computer, said key being adapted to generate a predetermined digital identification. That's going to be step 146, which identification is part of said identity data. That's where it gets merged into the identity data. So claim 21 already recites this. Okay, let's incorporate the digital ID into the identity data, and that's initial authentication.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Question?
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of quick points. First of all, we need to win on operating session and to thereby confirm, because both of those distinguished, focused on re-authentication. And the judgment below that was agreed to was on the basis that they don't do reauthentication. So it's true that they could win if they won either of those. We need to win both to go back, is why we're here on those issues.
But this is only because operating system and reauthentication are really the same thing. It's
correct.
What we've been discussing this morning.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
as if there's a separate issue out there. I was having trouble figuring out what operating system meant standing on its own. It doesn't stand on its own. it sounds what you're saying.
It's all interrelated. That's correct. But I just want to be clear that, you know, the court doesn't just focus on the one.
That's clear.
Second thing I want to just be clear that we all agree there is a call, I think, for the digital ID alone as part of initial authentication. And then it gets combined, as he said several times, with username and password, gets sent to the clearinghouse, and you know that claim one is about initial authentication because you have in the further elements of claim one after E, the combining to form said identity data of which the predetermined digital ID is a part. That is then sent to the server, which sends it to the clearinghouse. The clearinghouse authenticates, and then you release the protected resource. So that's exactly right. That it requests, because it has to request that off of the hardware key by itself, because that's what's on the hardware key, including for initial authentication. And to go to something Judge Bryson was discussing earlier, I think this is illustrative. One of the terms that was put into Claim 1 was selectively request. And it's worth noting in the judge's opinion at A47 and 48 that as part of construing the server software means on the server, it's a 112.6 limitation, and it's not contested on this appeal, the court's construction of the structure. And it said on page A48, at the top of that page, the corresponding structure is, quote, that portion of the server software that selectively determines whether, e.g., upon a request for access to protected computer resources, which we're saying is the start of a session, to request subscriber client computer to forward its digital identification to the first server computer to confirm the presence of a hardware key and equivalents thereof. So in that context, the court explained, and it's not contested, what selectively request meant, which is obviously something different from intermittently that was in Claim 5.
All right. Your time has expired, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted.